This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, welcome back to Picayune Conversations. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Calvin. And today we're going to have a little chat about something that we don't have deep expertise in, but it's something that we can, we like know enough to be dangerous about it. But maybe just to give I do think we have a level of knowledge about this that will give people kind of a big picture perspective on this that may be helpful as they think about themselves or loved ones or things like that. So what is it that we're, this mystery topic that we're talking about today? That people, of course, can read, I'm sure, in the title of the podcast.
Right, we already kind of spoiled that for you. Maybe we shouldn't. We should make it a surprise every time. No, this is from one of our viewers. I won't name names in case she doesn't want me to, but we love you. You know who you are. We're going to be talking about addiction today.
Oh, addiction. Okay.
Addiction.
Yeah, there we go. I'm going to act as if I had no idea that's what we're going to talk about today.
Sometimes we don't.
So, I mean, maybe a good place to start. It sounds just like a couple minutes ago, you were letting me know that you reached out to a couple colleagues of ours who we love and respect and who are much more, they actually do have a lot of expertise on addictions. And you asked them for some definitions. And I think we got really good definitions from both of them, but one is like very comprehensive. And so maybe we can just start with that. So
this one is from our friend Jim Holder. Please look him up, and he has like an assessment for addictions and like a treatment,
a face screening.
Yeah. It's online. It's easily accessible. Okay. His definition: addiction is an attempt to stay in a positive physiological state by using a substance or behavior to avoid the negative feeling state a person has chosen in life. Should I say it again?
Yeah, one more time.
For dramatic effect.
Yeah, of course.
Addiction is an attempt to stay in a positive physiological state by using a substance or behavior to avoid the negative feeling state a person has chosen in life.
Okay, now, we could probably could spend the whole time really even just like breaking that down and zooming in. Maybe that's what we'll end up doing, and maybe not. Either way is fine. But there were a few things that kind of stuck out to me in there. So there's the physiology aspect of it, you know, that we are acknowledged. I think sometimes Adlerians, for those of you who are maybe not clinicians or something, we are both trained as Adlerian counselors, and that comes from the name Alfred Adler, a 20th century psychiatrist, whatever. You can dig in further if you want. But sometimes Adlerians, we get accused of kind of being passé, and like we're out of touch with the like brain science or the physiology piece, which I think is really unfortunate. I think we forget that Adler really, I mean, he was a physician.
He was a doctor.
An ophthalmologist, an eye doctor. And so, you know, he was very actually aware of the importance of physiology and of the body, and probably in a lot of ways really incorporated that much more than, let's say, much more than Freud did in a kind of way. And so there is this like physiological aspect to addiction. I know we tend to think of those as like, we tend to think of addiction very much in forms of like drug and alcohol addiction, and those are kind of obviously physiological. But can you even maybe talk, I'm asking you to talk as maybe a non-expert like me,
correct,
but about how he also mentions behaviors on top of substances and how that also is a physiological thing and not just merely behavioral.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I'm thinking that he's talking about it is we tend to continue and practice, for the lack of a better word, but that is what it is. We're practicing mistaken behaviors that attempt to fulfill some mistaken goal of ours. Like, even if it's life means be impressive, right? Like, if you're addicted to something, what it probably means is you are dependent on success, but really you're afraid of it. You're afraid to go for it. You're afraid of what will happen. So you engage in, I don't know, addicting things like gambling or sex or alcohol. That's a pretty common one. Or cocaine. That's becoming popular again.
Oh, is that making a comeback now?
It's making a comeback.
I'm out of the loop on that. Yeah.
Hold on. I'm the expert here.
clearly.
But even stuff like that, it has like biological, physiological things that happen that you have to deal with. On top of it becomes an actual habit, a habit of, is it wrong to use the word like sideshow here? Like you're creating a different problem. Like now the problem, now you're fighting about your drinking instead of fighting about the actual thing. Now you're going for, you're trying to feel good. Like it's like tainted good, you know, you feel better. But as we know from Paul Rasmussen, better, always better, but it's not good. You're doing something in a suboptimal way. And you sometimes you know you're doing it, and that's the behavior part.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you say?
Well, I think we need to remember that I remember Paul Rasmussen making a very unsexy and kind of unromantic comment that I nevertheless believe it to be true, at least on a level of explanation. Okay, I don't think this is a comprehensive expression of who we are as human beings, but I don't think this is inaccurate. He said something to the extent, Paul, if you're watching this, please don't get upset with me if I misquote you, but he said something to the extent of, we basically are just emotion regulation machines, yeah, is what we are, you know? And what that is, right, is that, okay, well, I like sit on one butt cheek too long and there's something in my body that says like, hey, that's not good, right? And I get what we call uncomfortable. And then my body moves, it engages in this movement to accommodate that. And so I shift my weight to the other butt cheek and blood rushes back in. And then there's this little thing that goes, oh, so much better, right? And that's like this tiny little picture of what we're doing all the time. And so there are behaviors that we can engage in that have these, you know, like what I'm describing there, even just like shifting my weight, you know, onto different butt cheeks, like that's physiological. There are like chemicals that are put out into my body and into my brain that are, you know, part of what's going on. And so if you think about it, right, let's get back to Jim's definition here of like, it's trying to prop up kind of what we would call a felt plus state of that's, mm-hmm, that's like the, oh, this is how I want to feel. It's trying to prop that up in order to avoid this felt minus state of like, that's what I really don't want to avoid. And so it's something like this, right? If you are like, let's say that what you are is that you are, you're very nervous, you know, and you're frightened about being judged by other people and frightened of being rejected and turned down. And so then you go to a party, right? And kind of the idea of the party is like, oh, well, you're going to meet new people here. You're going to make some social connections. But the thing is that instead what you do is you stand in the corner scrolling through stuff on your phone. And it's like, okay, we could look at like, oh yeah, that's dopamine addiction and the, yeah, blue light and whatever, like, and that, again, I don't have all the expertise to comment on the physiology, but what we can say is that what you most certainly are doing is engaging in a behavior that protects you from these fears that you have of being rejected, of being judged, of being looked down upon because you're sucked into this other experience that, of course, then is affecting your physiology.
I think it was Adler. Didn't he say, this is going to be butchered, but like addicts are, well, I think he said drunkards. Sorry about that. But addicts, let's put addicts in there. Addicts are neurotically ambitious. Neurotically, yeah, ambitious. And that's what I was saying earlier about like kind of dependent on success. Like if you're neurotically ambitious, like what that says to me is that you have more ambition than you do courage. And the courage to do something that will help you connect with yourself and contribute to yourself and to others because you're afraid of rejection or all the other things you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, and here's where I think we need to I'm saying that you're not doing this because I know you to be very compassionate. I think this is where we need to have a lot of compassion for for people struggling with addiction. And that's this, that they are doing the exact same thing that you or I are doing at all times. And that is that we are in a state of moving away from a felt minus and towards a felt plus. We don't want to feel bad and we want to feel good. And that's all that they're doing. Yeah. It's just that they have found, Adler talks about the useless side of life and the useful side of life, and useful meaning that which contributes to the well-being of humankind. Yeah. And so it's, by the way, I'm not trying to like make this like moral or something, but I am saying that what happens is that when we get discouraged, there's this thing of like, I don't think it's going to work if I engage in life on the useful side of life. I don't think that I'm going to be successful. I don't think that I will reach my high ambitions. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I will matter. This kind of gets back to like crucial C's kinds of stuff. I don't think that I can do that on the useful side of life. And so I will shift to the useless side of life where, oh my gosh, all these things seem to, at least in the very short term, seem to be okay.
At least I feel better.
Yeah.
I might not have gotten the job and now I'm drunk, but at least I feel slightly better.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
One thing it reminds me of, Dr. Gabor Mate has this, beautiful observation about the opiate epidemic. You know, there's this question of like, okay, geez, you know, why are opiates just like destroying all these communities? Why are these drugs just out there? And he's saying, we need to stop asking the question, why the drug? And we need to start asking the question, why all the pain?
Yeah, addiction is a social illness. It's a social illness. It's people desperate for connection and belongingness. And that ends up being the remedy, you know, finding a way to have connection, like cultivate an environment where you feel valued and connected.
Yeah.
You know, because you can handle stuff and you don't have to do it alone, but that takes courage.
Yeah. And that's what we like kind of keep circling back to courage. It seems where there's this sense of, look, like life is painful and life is not safe and life is full of disappointment and, and rejection and sadness. And it's not just those things. Okay. But it is full of those things. And so it is understandable that when confronted with those things, people don't want to feel all that. Yeah. And so part of what we need to do socially is that we need to make sure that the message that we are giving to people is not, well, suck it up.
Yeah.
Right. We need to somehow be encouraging people, endowing people with courage to take on pain and sadness and betrayal and rejection and all those things that we understandably don't want to feel, to take those things on the useful side of life. And one of the things that I think is really disturbing is that there are instances in which it's just like the message that we give to people is that, it doesn't really matter like what you do with yourself here. You know, I'm thinking of how the opiate epidemic particularly hit hard in like Rust Belt communities where it's like company town, the plant shuts down and people, they like literally don't have anything to do, you know,
and they were doing hard labor, which they hurt their backs or, you know, whatever. And they need the medication legally.
Yeah. Yeah. But also they're doing that hard labor, but they had an opportunity to, and I'm not trying to like glorify all of these jobs or something, but like they were contributing and then that's all stripped away from them. And there's this kind of nihilism about life that it's like, what even is the use of, like you get so disconnected from the useful side of life, that it's just, so all this to say, I want us to talk a little bit about what we can do about addiction. And of course, we're going to take this from a very big picture view because we're not addiction counselors. We want to be very clear about that. Like we're not speaking as certified, addiction specialists or something. But what is it that we do in order to help folks with addiction?
Well, I would say let's start with understanding and self-compassion, because it is a problem of connection. And probably if it's at the expense of others, meaning like not socially interested, like, you probably need to understand that first. So therapy would be great, or some kind of support group, so you're not doing it alone and trying to figure it out, because the whole point is that you're missing connection.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you belong someplace, or that whatever task of life it is, work, social, or love, like you don't feel like you can achieve it with cooperation, that you have to do it in some other kind of way that is more useless.
Yeah.
What do you think comes after self-compassion?
Well, I do think that there is a sense of purpose that's necessary, you know, where there's, you know, look, it is harder to use coping strategies and, you know, or to go to a meeting or to call your sponsor or things like that is harder. And it is less, it's a lot less comfortable than using a substance or a behavior to regulate whatever's going on inside of you emotionally and physiologically. And so I think that I'm reminded of Nietzsche saying that, and this is gendered language, but he says, he who has a why can endure almost any how. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that people who are faced with this task, you know, of trying to live with an addiction, but to shift to not to cure an addiction, but to live with it on the useful side of life. Mm-hmm. I think they need to have a why. Mm-hmm. And that gets, I understand that's like kind of philosophical, but it's super important. Like they need to have a sense that it matters that they are around, that it matters that they are, that they are living on the useful side of life, that their contributions are of significance. I think these are things that we really need to remember, which, by the way, is why it is so damaging and deleterious to treat addicts with pity. And what I mean by that is to look at them as like this kind of lower species of just like, oh, well, they couldn't possibly ever do anything because they're an addict.
Yeah, they're incapable.
I mean, we need to be real. You know, I'm not saying like let's take addiction lightly or treat it as this like, oh, well, you know, I have problems too or something.
Yeah.
Like it's a really serious thing, mm-hmm. but also it does not compromise people's ability to make meaningful contributions as human beings. And when we treat addicts as if all that they are good for is to receive addiction counseling or, you know, to live in some, you know, residential treatment center forever, this is a deeply, deeply discouraging thing to, you know, it may come from a good place and a desire to help, but as a deeply harmful thing.
You're basically validating that they are incapable of doing what they think they can do.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Bubs on The Wire. Like, when did he start really doing better? Spoiler. But, like, when did he really start doing better? When he started, like, helping out at the, like, what do you call it, like a soup kitchen or something? Like, he was contributing. He was just washing dishes.
Yeah.
But, like, he started to come around and, like, really see himself as contributing something. And it's a great example of that.
I'm even thinking of our keynote address at our South Carolina Adlerian conference that we just had from this really incredible woman here in Greenville named Deb Moore, who did probably 20, 30 years of work with our unhoused population here in Greenville. And she, I think the title, I may slightly misquote the title of her talk, but it was Making Helpers of the Helped. Something like that, or making servants of the served. And I know, like, making servants, I get that that's maybe like, but the idea of it, right, is not treating unhoused people as if they just exist to be pitied and to have resources showered on them by wealthy, privileged people, but that, no, like, they also have something to offer that is of significance, that is not of lesser significance. They have stories. They have abilities. They can lend a hand. And it was cool to hear her talk about how in so many of these people's lives, it is when they were offered an opportunity or took, in some instances, an opportunity to help other people, that is actually what started actually moving their recovery forward.
It brings you back to life.
Yeah.
To engage with other people like that and to give something back.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Final thoughts about addiction that we might want to share?
We didn't mention that there are obviously like physiological things that happen. Like if you're trying to withdraw, or I mean trying to not use, there's going to be withdrawal symptoms like the DTs and all of that. And like if you do cocaine, you know, a certain way, like it disrupts the cartilage in your nose. There's going to be certain things like that. And I don't want us to like obviously that has to be part of like the initial treatment, you know, because like if you're not doing well physiologically, like therapy's not gonna
Yeah. Well, and this gets back to, like, it's like holistic care, yeah. right? Like, we think of the mind and the body and the soul as these separate things. And that's a really, over the course of human history, like, that's a pretty bizarre idea. You know, if we think about, that's kind of like a, well, now I'm going to get into other territory that I'm not an expert in. But, you know, it feels like kind of like a modernist enlightenment era idea of, oh, we're going to separate these things out. It's why, by the way, I resent it when people talk about addiction as being purely physiological. It's like, no, but our physiology, like, our mind is not separate from our physiology. Our soul is not mm-hmm. separate from our physiology. And so, like, let's not make it. But in the same way, we would not want to make addiction simply a psychological right. or an emotional thing. It's there's a holistic reality to our behavior as human beings, and addiction is no exception to that. And this is why we need to think of this also. And last thing I'll say here is that in the same way that it's a false idea to separate mind, body, soul, you know, all those things, it's also a false idea to separate a person from the human community. Yeah. And really, like, this is going to sound really new agey, but like the cosmos, like this is like a system, you know, and you can't exist not in the system. And there's a reality of, like, this is sociological, it is political, it is socioeconomic, it is psychological, it's physiological, it's cultural, it's all of these things. And so all those things need to be part, if those things are part of the problem, they also need to be part of the solution.
You articulated what I was trying to do. Brought it all together. I appreciate that. Had to say, sometimes we have DTs, and yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we touched on that. But I'm trying to think of anything we missed.
Well, I mean, this is why we have these little conversations.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
This is why we are doing this anyways, is because we'd get into these conversations and we're like, we really should just press record before we have them.
That's true.
So, anyways, for those of you out there, we hope that this has been a little bit helpful, giving you a way to think about addiction, again, maybe for yourself, maybe for loved ones, maybe for just, you know, society in general. So as always, we'll put in a little bit of information in the description about how to reach us if you have questions, if you have a suggestion for an episode that we could do. That's the whole reason we did this one today. Leave us a little suggestion and we'll do what we can to accommodate. So thank you very much.
Bye.
We'll see you next time.